Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. Remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right now to the front lines of history in the making. Big event occurred on Friday, right after we went off the air. Wisconsin Senate race, Democratic primary, Sarah Godlewski withdrew from the race and she endorsed Mandela Barnes. A few days before that, Alex Lazary had dropped out of the race and he also endorsed Mandela Barnes. When all of this happened at the beginning of this week, the Democratic Party issued a formal endorsement of Mandela Barnes, even though there are four more candidates still in the race, which is contrary to the Democratic Party Constitution. So where are we? What's going on? Now, first of all, I know Mandela Barnes. He's a friend of mine. I think he'll be a great senator, and I think he'll beat Ron Johnson. But this is really unprecedented. Sarah Godlewski put $4.5 million into the race out of her own money, and she withdrew less than 2 weeks before the election. Alex Lazary put $12.5 million into the race, and he withdrew about 2 weeks before the election. The two principal opponents to Mandela Barnes right now who are still on the ballot are Stephen Olakara and Peter Pekarsky, and then there are two others beyond that. But Stephen Olakara and Peter Pekarsky are running hard, and they're qualified individuals. But Mandela Barnes now has an overwhelming advantage. And as I say, I know him as well. He's a friend, and he will be a great senator.
Now, what's happening in the Democratic Party 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago,
people just didn't pull out of the race. In the governor race, there were two people who pulled out, Dana Wachs and Andy Gronick. They pulled out of the governor race 2 months before the election, but that's because they had been knocked off the ballot for insufficient signatures. They had to go through a legal process to be restored. Then they got back on. But at that point, it looked very, very disorganized, and so that they both stayed out. But in general, you commit to a race, and you have supporters, you have donors, and your supporters expect you to be on the ballot. In this case, a lot of them already voted. They already voted for Sarah Godlewski and Alex Lazary and Tom Nelson. He dropped out weeks ago. He had supporters. I think you owe it to your supporters, frankly, to stay in the race. I think you owe it to your supporters to continue to say the things and your positions on issues that induce them to support you in the first place. You owe it to your supporters. There is a legal process whereby you can change your vote if your candidate drops out. And what's the basis of that? Right now, Tom Nelson, Sarah Godlewski, and Alex Lazary's names still are on the ballot. They'll be on the ballot on Election Day, August 9. They'll be on the ballot for people doing early in-person voting. And they're going to get tens of thousands of votes. People who, A, voted before they dropped out, or B, don't know that they dropped out. A lot of people in the state don't know they dropped out. That's inside baseball. It's been in the newspapers. Maybe it's been on TV. A lot of people don't see it. The way that you change your vote, your candidate is still in the ballot, but you still want to vote for someone else. In this case, Godlewski out, Lazary out, Nelson out. You could vote for Mandela Barnes, you could vote for Peter Pekarsky, you could vote for Stephen Olcara, or two of the other names that are on the ballot. What you do is it's called spoiling the ballot. That's a legal term, S-P-O-I-L, spoiling the ballot. It's legal. And what you do is there's a phone number you call, and you go down and you get your ballot, and you have to cast a new one. Do not go in on your own. Do not go in on your own and go, I'm going to go in person early early voting, or I'm going to go on election day. You go up to me and go, well, you know, I voted for Nelson and now I want to vote for this one. Do not do that for a lot of reasons. They don't have the resources to check on you at the time anyway. And if you vote twice and you haven't had authority to do it, that's a crime. So do not do that. Do not do that. But you can call your clerk's office and they will tell you the procedure and you can do it over the phone. I frankly don't endorse that. I don't think it's a good idea. I have not yet voted. I have not yet voted. So I would have no reason to do it. But even if I had voted and it had been for one of the candidates who dropped out, I would not spoil my ballot. I would not go through the legal hoop, call them up and get a new ballot. There are some people who probably did that for Nelson and then voted for Godlewski or Lazary and they dropped out too. I don't know how many times you can spoil your ballot. I really don't. I suspect only once. And this is serial dropping out. So, you know, for people who are thinking of running in the future, you owe it to your supporters. You know, yeah, you don't want to spend a lot more of your own money. Lazary put in $12.5 million. Godlewski put in $4.5 million. There's no law that says you have to pump in a lot more money or any more money to do television advertising. Some of them had already made media buys right up the election anyway. But even if you didn't, hold press conferences, go around the state, get up and talk about the issues, say what you believe. That's the way Bill Proxmire did it. That's the way Fighting Bob La Follette did it. That's the way Pat Lucey did it. On the Republican side, that's the way Lee Dreyfus did it, Warren Knowles, Tommy Thompson. That's what you do. And if you lose, you lose. Winston Churchill once said that politics is just like war, except that you can be killed 17 times. And deal with it. Deal with it. I personally think that people who run, even if they're unsuccessful, stand by their principles right to the end, marshaling their supporters around them, more highly regarded going forward and have a better chance in the future of being the nominee than if they go up to 2 weeks before the election or 10 days before the election or whatever and go, okay, I've taken all you people along, I've taken all your contributions, and now I'm going to turn to another candidate whom you presumably didn't support in the first place because you went for me. I don't think that's the way to do it. That's my own feeling. I do not think that's the way to do it. Yeah, a lot of it has to do with money. I understand it. You know, Bill Proxmire, he was my mentor in politics. Bill Proxmire served in the Senate from 1957 to 1988, 31 years. And towards the end, you know, he spent under $100. Why did he spend under $100? He spent under $100 to mail back contributions that he got. He didn't take any contributions. What he did is he walked around the state. Anybody is over, I think, over 50 that is listening to this broadcast shook hands with Bill Proxmire at least once. At a grocery store, at a Packer game, at the flower exhibit at the state fair. He used to keep, he told me afterwards, a clicker in his pocket. And every time he shook a hand, he'd click it. He shook over 4 million hands. Over 4 million hands in his lifetime. He put bandages around his hands. I campaigned with him, and he campaigned with me when I ran for office. Very grateful to him. He's an outstanding U.S. Senator, my friend William Proxmire. But that was a different era. Now, a lot of it's consultants. A lot of it's you have to marshal the support from interest groups, either on the far left, if you're in the Democratic Party, or far right, if you're in the Republican Party. There are no fair maps. There are no fair maps. Everything is the primary. Everything is the primary. And the only way you're going to win a primary is if you skew to the border of your party. Border of your party. In this particular case, I think Mandela done a very good job rounding up the border of his party. One thing I would say to my friend Mandela is this. Take a good look at John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. He's doing very well. John Fetterman got the endorsement of the fringes of his party, but he's his own man, and he'll be his own man in the Senate. I commend that to Mandela Barnes. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, development in Maryland. In Maryland, Maryland has a Republican governor named Larry Hogan. He's a Republican, conservative, but he has a lot of integrity, and he's taken on Trump. He blasted Trump for what he did on January 6th, and Larry Hogan is term limited. So he is laying the groundwork for a presidential race in 2024. Who knows if he's going to get nominated? He's a moderate Republican, and he's running in Trump territory. Okay, Connor, can you turn that music off? He came out today, and he made an important statement. He has two candidates, one for governor and one for attorney general that he's not supporting. But not only is he not supporting them, he blasted them. He blasted his own parties. And I want to tell you something. The Democratic Party strategy is responsible for at least one of those candidates. And the Democratic Party really made a bad mistake. And here's the deal. Larry Hogan, moderate Republican. The Republican nominee for governor is a guy named Dan Cox, C-O-X, Dan Cox. Hogan blasted him as a QAnon conspiracy theorist. Dan Cox is QAnon, pure and simple. He's a conspiracy theorist. Not only does he say that the last election was rigged, but he goes down the line and he will not certify any election in which a Democrat wins. He's flat out and said it. Now, that is fascism. That's saying that the election doesn't matter. Remember Stalin's dictum. Stalin was a mass murderer, killed 20 million people in the 30s and 40s in Russia, died in 1953, did it right up into the 1950s, sent people to the gulag, murdered them. And he once said, it doesn't matter who the people vote for. What matters is who counts the votes. Well, I'll tell you what. Dan Cox is going to be counting the votes in Maryland if he wins. The attorney general candidate is a guy named Michael Peroutka, P-E-R-O-U-T-K-A. And he, if it's possible, is either as bad or worse than Cox. He's the one who said 9/11 was done by bureaucrats in the American government who planted explosives in the building. He also said that bureaucrats have planted explosives in other buildings and cities around the country, and we will continue to see a 9/11. Now, 9/11 occurred 21 years ago, so, and of course he's lying. It was done by jihadists, by Saudi Arabians, and the Saudi Arabian government was part of it. Peroutka blames our government. He hates the United States, and he is the Republican candidate for governor, for attorney general of Maryland. Larry Hogan said, I won't vote for either one of them. I won't vote for my own party's governor candidate or attorney general candidate. How did these people get nominated? I'll tell you how Dan Cox got nominated. I mean, you know, Republicans, you'd think, wouldn't nominate somebody who thought that the U.S. government launched 9/11. You'd think that the Republicans in Maryland wouldn't nominate a guy who was a QAnon conspiracy theorist for governor. You'd think. Turns out what happened is the Democratic Party concocted a strategy at the national level to take right-wing people, truly right-wing, nutty people, and get them nominated in the other party. More than $1 million in Democratic money went to support Dan Cox to get him nominated as the Republican. So I'm angry. I've contributed to the Democratic Party all my life. I don't want money going to the Democratic Party to give to a QAnon conspiracy theorist, frankly. I do not want that. And the theory was, goes back to Claire McCaskill in Missouri in 2012 when she was looking bad in the polls, but there was a guy on the right running for the nomination, didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. And he's the one who made fun of women, said, you know, when they, if somebody claims that they were raped, that maybe they were telling the truth, maybe they weren't, maybe it was legitimate, you know, shut his mouth off, very cruel person. So McCaskill and her people put in money to get him nominated. And he upset the conventional Republican. She went on to win in the general election. There's a guy named Joe Donnelly in Indiana right after that did the same thing. Joe Donnelly, Democrat, good man, didn't have a chance in red Indiana. And the other, you know, some of these Republicans are they're obsessed with sexual assault and laughing at it and saying it doesn't exist. I don't know why. These are some very strange people. So they put money in to nominate the nut on the other side in Indiana, and he got him nominated. And Donnelly went on and beat him. So we had two seats, Missouri and Indiana, that we shouldn't normally have had, and that's great, except the idiots in the Democratic National Committee go, let's do that even with the people on the other side now who won't certify Democratic votes. That's a lot different from a cruel, sadistic person saying something about sexual assault. That's unacceptable. But if for any reason they got nominated, in those days, it would not have affected the future elections. This one, in 2024, if Dan Cox becomes the governor of Maryland and Michael Peralta becomes the attorney general of Maryland, a Democratic winner who will win in Maryland for president in 2024 is not going to be certified. It's going to have to go to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is going to go, well, you know, the Republicans, well, you know, the state can do what they want. And something similar is happening in Pennsylvania, Mastriano, QAnon, Republican nominee, helped by Democrats. And this is what we get. And he gets to appoint the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania. So those two entities, Secretary of State and Governor of Pennsylvania, right-wing nuts who will not certify a Democrat, Maryland, Peralta and Cox, right-wing nuts, won't certify a Democrat. And Democratic presidential candidates can win. They can win in those states. They do win in those states, and they won't get certified because of the Democratic Party. I'm tired of this, very tired of this. It is so stupid, so very stupid, to take Democratic money and put it to people who will turn out and kill you by not certify you the future election. And then what happens? Then what happens is it goes to a Republican Supreme Court who said, well, what the heck? What the heck? States can do whatever they want, right? That's what they've said. And that's what they're going to say in this North Carolina case they're going to look at in October. We need a change in the leadership of the Democratic National Committee, and the idiots who did this should be thrown off any decision-making group and how these contributions are spent. Larry Hogan, the Republican, moderate, saw through it. He won't vote for Cox or Peralta. Just one vote. We go to a break. You're on the line. Do not hang up. I'll get back to you right after the break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. And Bill Proxmire was the Democratic nominee, and the Republican nominee was Walter Kohler, who was the governor, you know, from Kohler, Wisconsin, and everybody expected him to win. He bought a house in Washington, D.C. He bought a house in Washington, D.C., but Bill Proxmire didn't give up. Bill Proxmire kept campaigning around the state, and everybody laughed at him because he had been our governor nominee in 92 for the in 52 for the Democrats, in 54 and 56. Everybody said he was a perennial candidate. He washed up. And I remember talking to him about that one time. He said, you know, Matt, there was another guy who ran and lost several times and finally won. And we were lucky that that happened. And he's the guy he looked up to. And that's true. There was a guy who was elected to Congress in 1846. But he opposed the Mexican-American War. He thought that that was wrong. And so he couldn't run for re-election. Then he ran for the Senate in 1858 and lost. Then he ran for president in 1860, and everybody laughed at him. His name was Abraham Lincoln. We're lucky that he got elected. We're lucky that Bill Proxmire stuck to it, and he got elected in 57, then the general election in 58. And I'll tell you, give you a little background, Gary, on the Golden Fleece Award. He told me that in his first election, he was a conventional Democrat, you know, voting for everything and that, you know, Jack Kennedy had put up and all that, all the good stuff. But they nicknamed him Billion Dollar Bill. And that was starting to have an impact on people. And then he realized that he could be just as responsible voting for the good programs that needed to be voted for, but at the same time, like you say, looking for fraud, not just in military procurements, but there's fraud all over the place. And waste, really, frequently just waste. And he was the taxpayer's watchdog. I remember one time, you know, I was running for office and things were not looking good. I did not win the election. And Bill was the color commentator on the local ABC affiliate here in Milwaukee. And somebody said, well, Flynn looks like he's not going to win this thing unless he carries Waukesha 2-1. And he's a Democrat. That can't happen. Bill Proxmire said, last election, I carried Waukesha 2-1. So he was a guy who had support all across party lines. And I can't tell you how much he meant to the party, how much he meant to me, and how much he meant to a lot of younger guys that were coming up. So I really appreciate your terrific memory. I mean, it's really terrific that you got to meet him. Really terrific that you got to meet him. And, you know, he passed away, I don't know, 20 years ago. He had Alzheimer's at the end. I spoke at his funeral along with other people. It was a great honor. So thanks a lot for calling in, Gary. I appreciate it. Want to talk about something else now. And this has to do with China. Nancy Pelosi is leaving, is scheduled anyway, for Taiwan, for Asia and Taiwan on Friday. That has produced a huge diplomatic dust-up. A huge diplomatic dust-up. Xi of China, president of China, China's 5,000 years old, mainland China, and it's essentially been a slave state for 5,000 years. Under the emperors, you had to kowtow. You've heard the word kowtow, K-O-W-T-O-W. You had to kowtow to somebody. That's a Chinese thing where if you were ushered in the emperor's presence, you couldn't look at him. If you looked at him, they'd kill you. So you had to crawl on your belly across the carpet and pull on your hair to show you were subservient to him. And he could do whatever he wanted. And then, of course, Communist Party got rid of the last emperor. And Xi is no different from one of their emperors. It's really a slave state in many respects. Well, they have their eyes on Taiwan. Taiwan is Chinese, Han Chinese, H-A-N, just like the mainland Chinese. Mainland China calls itself legally the People's Republic of China. Taiwan calls itself the Republic of China. The People's Republic is a communist country. And they say they want Taiwan. Taiwan is 100 miles from the mainland of China. Taiwan owns an island that's 10 miles from China. And China's had their tasters out for them for a long time. Well, they don't like to lose face. Saving face is very important to them. And Nancy Pelosi would be the highest ranking American to go there if she goes, since Newt Gingrich went there in 1997 when he was Speaker. So what she's going to do, there's been a lot of pushback from China. They're sort of threatening war and all this. And they shoot their mouth off. One of the problems for Xi is that he wants to stay in power. And they have a Communist Party Politburo of more than 300 people. And they will kowtow to him up to a point. But if he looks like he's losing it, they'll get rid of him as quick as they can. And right now, things aren't going all that well economically in China, frankly. And partly because he's cracking down on the insurgent economic rise of China, which was produced by letting people own private companies and minister and emulate us a little bit. And he's cracking down on that. There's a guy named Jack Ma, M-A, who is the equivalent of something like, say, a Bezos or a Bill Gates, you know, in other words, a big industrialist, very wealthy guy. And they arrested him and threw him in jail. He just disappeared for no reason. And that sent a chilling message. Anyway, what is Pelosi going to do? I strongly think she has to go to Taiwan. She has to go to Taiwan. She invited the leadership of the Democrats and Republicans in the House of Representatives, and they've accepted. And it looks now she's consulted with Biden. Biden and the Defense Department have said formally, well, you know, maybe you want to defer this a little bit, basically to let Xi save a little face. But she can't do that. And I think that secretly what they're doing is ginning up the following. She will go to Asia. She'll go to Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Singapore, and then she'll stop in Taiwan on the way back. Now, that's going to deal a terrible blow, really terrible blow to Xi. He will not save face. That will hurt him because he wants to stay in power. And the rest of the Politburo are going to start to lick their chops, throw him out. They want to get in there and steal money themselves, and he's stealing most of it. Let's them steal a little bit. It's a communist country. Communism is simply the modern word for fascism. You know, you're in China. There was a woman over there. She was an athlete, and she gave a press conference, and she's saying that she was raped. She was sexually assaulted by the number two or three guy in the whole Chinese government. She disappeared. Then she came back and held a press conference and said she was lying. She wasn't. That's the way they operate over there. They torture people. In our Federal Reserve right now, report was just put out by the Senate that there are a number of Chinese nationals that have worked there that have been feeding non-public information, secret information back to the Chinese. Why? Because they're traitors, maybe some of them, but not all of them. But they have relatives back there. And then they just get a visit from a guy here in the United States. He goes, you know, you have a mother and a sister back there. And if you don't want something to happen to them, you got to do this. We have got to keep that. Take that into account. In the press for multiculturalism and diversity, you cannot hire foreign nationals for very, very sensitive things. And you certainly can't do it when it involves people who have relatives in communist countries or fascist countries like Russia, run by organized crime, who used to be communist countries. So good for Nancy Pelosi. You know, Nancy Pelosi is unbelievable. She's in her early 80s. She's still doing this strong, still risking things. I mean, for a woman her age, to go to Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Singapore, then go to Taiwan, she will probably have a U.S. military jet escort. There is some discussion about what the Chinese reaction will be. Will it be that they will finally fly military jets over Taiwan, which they haven't done yet? They've come close, but they haven't done yet. It'll be like they're flying military jets over our country. They wouldn't dare do that, but they may try to do it in this case just to scare folks. It's a very tense circumstance. They have got to understand that they can't dictate where our officials go. We are the biggest economy in the world. We have the strongest military in the world. We have the highest values in the world, and we have the strongest constitution in the world. And everybody else tries to emulate us, but they only go halfway. There are many of these fascist countries and communist countries who just Xerox our constitution. And they say, that's our constitution too. But what about the Fourth Amendment? We need a warrant to go into somebody's house. They'll just come in the middle of the night and drag you out. What about the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination? They'll torture people they confess. These countries are founded on lies. China is essentially still a slave state, a beehive, an ant colony, and they have got to be instructed that they do not say where our people go. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
And it pushes me onward, down off the hill to Felina I go. Off to my right I see five knotted cowboys, off to my left right a dozen or more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me, I have to make it to Rose's back door.
As the snow flies.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, let's go to the January 6th commission. And you would think that the Republicans would look at it and go, well, that's behind us. That's terrible. We're not going to nominate this guy again. We're not going to attack people who appeared before that commission. And you would be wrong. You would be wrong. Kevin McCarthy has now just attacked Cassidy Hutchinson. Now, Cassidy Hutchinson, I remember watching her testimony. I remember watching that whole hearing where she was the star witness. And there was an awful lot of integrity, dignity, and poise, and willingness to take risks in her testimony. She's now in a witness protection program. She's gotten death threats from Republicans. Kevin McCarthy has not criticized those death threats. They haven't been prosecuted. I'm going to say it till I'm blue in the face. Prosecute these people. Don't tell me you can't figure out how to trace the call. Don't tell me that. In the last year, there were 1,000 reports of death threats in politics and healthcare. In other words, it would be poll workers, it would be politicians, it would be witnesses, or it would be Dr. Fauci. He has full-time security too. And health commissioners in states like Wisconsin, in counties that say we should have a mask mandate or a vaccine mandate or something or other. The immediate recourse is death threats. You know how many convictions there were in 1,000 threats in 1 year? One conviction out of 1,000 allegations. Yes, prosecutors are overwhelmed. Yes, law enforcement's overwhelmed. Pick them out and start sending people to jail for a couple of years. And if you see a guy in your hometown who shot his mouth off and now he's in the hoosegow for 2 or 3 years and loses his job, his family doesn't have him for 2 or 3 years, they will start to think a little differently. Well, now Kevin McCarthy is attacking Cassidy Hutchinson, and frankly, he's doing it hoping to be the speaker if and when the Republicans win in November. And I'm beginning to think they're not going to win in November. And if they don't, malpractice on their part, because normally the party out of power, that is the party that doesn't have the presidency, picks up some House seats. They only have to pick up about 4 or 5 House seats to take the majority. There's already indications that a lot of people in the what used to be the Freedom Caucus in his party will not vote for him. They know he's two-faced and smarmy, but he's being two-faced and smarmy right now in a bad way to try to suck up to them. So here's what he said. Cassidy Hutchinson said that he called her, he, Kevin McCarthy, called Cassidy Hutchinson in a panic on January 6th and told her to stop Trump from going to the Capitol. Stopped Trump from going to the Capitol. He said, Cassidy, you can't let him go to the Capitol. Cassidy was one he could get into. She was the deputy. He now denies he said that. There are telephone records. You can tell if he called Cassidy Hutchinson. And then he goes, well, I don't recall it. Now, for those of you who don't have a legal background, I want to parse that out for you. When a witness says, I did not say that, I did not call her, and you get the phone records, you can indict him for felony of obstruction and lying, perjury and lying under oath. If he says, I don't recall doing it, he can't be prosecuted, and they never are prosecuted. Even if it was yesterday, even if he said, well, do you recall, did you call her yesterday and tell her this? Even if right then and there he said, I don't recall, you know he's lying. I know he's lying. You know, the guy doesn't have dementia. But that is such a subjective psychological process that prosecutors never prosecute that. They never prosecute a guy who says, I don't recall it, even though any idiot would have recalled it. So he changed it. He doesn't recall it. Then he said, he denies that he told Trump to stop the insurrection. And he denies that Trump said to him, well, Kevin, maybe they think more of their country than you do, or words to that effect. The problem is that right after January 6th, he told a woman, a representative in Congress from the state of Washington, exactly that. He said, you wouldn't believe it. I called Trump. I got through to him and told him to stop it. Stop the mob. Tell them to go home. I'm sure you know what Trump said to me. He said, well, Kevin, maybe they care more about their country than you do. He said that to her. She's testified to that to the commission. Now, if he denies that he said that to her, and she says he did, they could prosecute him for perjury, but frequently they don't like to do it. And he said, she said, one-on-one, no recording of it. On the other hand, he could say to them, I don't recall saying that. All he's trying to do is to suck up to the Freedom Caucus so that they vote to make him the speaker. That's the only thing he's doing here. Everybody knows he said that to her. Everybody knows he said that to Trump. And everybody knows that Trump said that to him. And then Cassidy Hutchinson testified. You may remember this. After McCarthy told her that stop Trump from going to the Capitol, she said to him, quote, well, Kevin, Trump just said it on stage that he's going. And he then said to Cassidy Hutchinson, Cassidy, figure it out. Don't come up here. I think she was telling the truth. She said it with a very, very straight demeanor. And it was very, very much, frankly, what other people had been saying to Trump that day. Sean Hannity, Don Trump Jr., a lot of them, Laura Ingraham, had all called Mark Meadows, in the case of Hannity, Trump himself, said, you got to stop it. Your legacy will be ruined. This is very consistent with that. What's happening is that Kevin McCarthy is denying that it happened and then changing and said he doesn't remember it, doesn't recollect it. Now, my question is, is the Freedom Caucus, you know, how dumb are they? Not dumb, but I mean, how willing are they to just go along to get along with this stuff? They're right wing. They're right wing nuts. They want a true believer. Can they possibly vote for Kevin McCarthy when they know very well what he said? And frankly, what he said was the right thing to say. And frankly, if he had any integrity whatsoever, he'd say, you're darn right I said that to her. Told her not to have him come up here. And when she said that he'd already announced it on stage, I said, Cassidy, figure it out. Don't come up here. You're darn right that I called Trump at the White House. You're darn right I did. And told him to stop this insurrection. Somebody's going to get killed up here. Turned out several people got killed. And Trump said, well, Kevin, exactly right. That's what he said. I am the minority leader. I will one day be the speaker, and I stand for integrity. If he had said that, put it that way, where people could trust his word, I think he'd have a better chance of being the speaker than if he's all weird and slippery and smarmy around and denying that he said things or not recalling things that everybody's just heard on national television testified to by people with a lot of integrity. I just think It's worse than a crime. It's a blunder. What he is doing is worse than a crime. It's a blunder. And so good. They throw him out. The problem is, who do they get in there as the speaker? If the right-wing nuts take over the Republican caucus, you're going to end up with somebody like Gymnasium Jim G.Y.M. Jordan, or God forbid, somebody like Elise Stefanik or Scalise, who are absolutely in Trump's pocket and absolutely have checked any integrity they had at the door and are doing Trump's bidding. And you know something? It is not just Kevin McCarthy that is doing this. There's a fellow named Caldwell, who was a former FBI section chief, and he was arrested in connection with January 6th. Believe it or not, he's an FBI section chief. He was off duty. And he's been charged with seditious conspiracy, which is a felony, which can get you a lot of years in jail. And when they, with a search warrant, searched his papers, you know what they found? They found that he had a death list of people that he wanted to kill. Turns out he was a member of the Oath Keepers. And you know who was on that death list? Two witnesses, Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss. Remember them? Mother and daughter, wonderful women from Georgia, rural Georgia, African-American women who are doing their job. They look forward to it. They liked it. They love doing it. And then they posted videos of them, Giuliani did and others, saying that they were cooking up votes. And what they were doing was pushing sort of like a postal cart of votes absentee to be counted. That's what you do. And they lost their business. They had to go into hiding. They made leather purses. That's how they supported themselves. They're afraid. They have protection. And Caldwell, FBI section chief, also a member of the Oath Keepers, had them on his death list to kill. There are some sick puppies out there, very sick puppies, and they've got to start going to jail. And not just the guys like Caldwell, the people that have sent them up there like Trump, Giuliani, Mo Brooks, and the other people that ginned up this crowd. We're going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after.
So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. Then one night in desperation,